Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Write on Four Corners. I'm your host, Stelcherie Gladden. I'm an author and an editor, and on this week's episode, we will be talking to Richard Melzer about his biography about NFL player Don Perkins. So, Richard, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you this evening. I am Richard Melzer. I live in Belen, New Mexico. I'm retired as a history professor. I worked at the UNM Valencia campus for 37 years, teaching mostly New Mexico history. My vocation, my hobby, everything is history. I just love to do it. So even in retirement, I continue to write and to do research. And Don Perkins is just the most recent of my several books.
Yeah, you have quite an impressive list. And I noticed the book with Don Perkins was a little bit different than a lot of your back catalog of your books. And I read just a little bit of the history of how you came to write this, and I thought that would be a great place to start. So tell everybody how you got the opportunity to write about Don's life.
Yes, I've written several biographies before, but this one was a little different. One of my students, Karen Walter, one of my fine students, one of my best, came to me one day during a college event and asked if I would like to meet her father. And I had no idea who her father was. And she said that it was Don Perkins. And, you know, it was so typical because Don Perkins was so humble. And it was typical of Karen and everyone in the family that they were humble as well. So I was very busy. I was doing other things that I didn't think I'd have a chance to do this book. But I did meet Don a couple of days after that. And he was so kind and helpful. And I couldn't help it. I just needed to get to do this book. And I'm so glad with a lot of help and support from the family and all of his friends, we were able to put together.
Well, I'm so glad that she knew you and met you and trusted you with that opportunity to tell her dad's story, because it's a really fascinating story. I really enjoyed reading it. Tell our listeners just kind of a little bit of an overview of who Don was, and then we'll get into more details as we go through some questions.
All right, good. Yeah, Don Perkins was born and raised in Waterloo, Iowa. He was not a Southerner. In fact, his parents had come from the South, from Mississippi and from Texas, what's called the Great Migration. That's when millions of African Americans fled from the South and the segregation of the South to the North from about 1900 to about 1950. And they went to various places. Most went to large cities like New York and Chicago, but some went to smaller places like Waterloo, Iowa. And it's because Waterloo had some factories, a John Deere factory, for example, and they hired blacks in the South as well as local people. But they had such a demand for labor that there were opportunities for black families. So that's where Don was born and raised. He was born and raised on the west side of Waterloo, and that's more the white side of the community. It was just a coincidence because his family was very poor. But so he went to the white high school, and he got along really well with the teachers and the students there. And they really liked his playing ability. He said they couldn't wait to get him in a uniform, football uniform, when he was in junior high school. So he did really well in high school. But he realized that his acceptance was limited to the campus. Everywhere else he went in Waterloo, there was unofficial Jim Crow rules or policies, and so he had to be careful in many ways. The most famous way was when he was dating a white girl, and her family did not like that, and so they caused some problems there. So the book is about his life, his career in football, in high school and at UNM as an All-American, and then as a Dallas Cowboy. But it's also about his life otherwise, his family and all their struggles with poverty and segregation back in the 50s and 60s when it was still, of course, a major problem. It is today, too. But he suffered in Waterloo, somewhat in Albuquerque, but especially in Dallas.
Yeah, that's a strong theme throughout the book of just how he experienced those cultural changes. And I was happy to hear that, for the most part, Albuquerque and New Mexico in general was a place that he and his family felt accepted and welcome overall. New Mexico certainly has its issues with racism, but that was encouraging that he could come here and feel good enough about being in this community that they stayed, that they came back here, and this is where he retired. That was really nice to hear, especially living in an area where some of those issues of racism up here in northern New Mexico are dealt with on a day-to-day basis.
Right. You know, the minute the Dallas Cowboys season was over, his wife had the station wagon packed up, and they were ready to go back to Albuquerque because it was such a safe haven for them, especially in the Northwest Valley, where there's such a great mixture of different groups. So he felt especially, and that's where he wanted to raise his kids. They certainly it worked out well for everyone, him and all his four children.
It's great. It was sad to read those early parts where he's coming to Dallas after jumping around a bunch, but where his first few years in Dallas and facing some of those things that he hadn't experienced in high school or really in it during his time at UNM, of having to only room with other Black players when they traveled, of not being able to take the team bus and having to take a taxi to over to the hotel, and just some of those issues of like, oh, this is a very different mentality, and how devastating that was to him to have been raised in an area where, like you said, there was some unofficial segregation and laws still going on that he ran into, but he at least was in a community on his campus that accepted him, at least in most ways. And then, you know, to reach that point in his career where it's like, you know, you've made it to the NFL. Like, this is really exciting. It's a dream come true. And then to be treated so poorly by the community, you know, like how sad that was.
He had a wonderful, wonderful voice, clear and just wonderful. It was said that when he spoke to everyone, stopped because I learned to listen to his voice. But it didn't have any inflection. You couldn't tell by the voice that he was African-American. So he would call real estate agents to look at rental property for his family while they were during the football season. And the real estate agent would hear his voice on the phone, and he'd say, oh, sure, come over, we'll show you the property. Well, when he got there, they saw that he was Black, and they suddenly announced that the property had been rented already. This is the 60s. Today, the athletes are much more vocal and involved in protests and social media and all that. In the 60s, they weren't like that. Even though it was the height of the civil rights movement, they were very seldom involved. But he eventually spoke out against those policies. Like you said, having to room with only Blacks on the Cowboys, and then the segregation for his family.
Well, that's interesting because several episodes ago, I was talking to another biographer of Roy White and his experience in the early 60s in Major League Baseball, confronting some of those issues as well. And it reminded me reading this of how in the Roy White biography, he talked about that lack of free agency and how much that affected players when it came to speaking up about things. And it seemed similar in football where, you know, they didn't have a lot of say in where they went. If the team owners didn't like something that they were doing, it could drastically affect their job, and they didn't really have a lot of recourse at that point in time to stand up. It was scary. You know, there could be some very harsh consequences for trying to instigate some of that social change. And it's really impressive that Don was able to be part of that and help end that practice of segregating the players when they're traveling and hotels being able to refuse rooms to some of them.
Right, and I think a lot of that had to do with him becoming a famous football player. They more or less had to pay attention to him. As a rookie or, you know, a player in his early years, he was still making the team and trying to impress them. I don't think he would have had the same voice as he did later.
I'm sure you're right. And I'm just glad that that's what he used his voice for once he had that opportunity, because it really helped make a difference in players who came after him. That's really great to know. Now, some of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, being that we're in New Mexico, his time at UNM. Those were fun chapters to read. I got my bachelor's from UNM. My son's attending there now, and it's just a big part of New Mexico's history. And it was interesting to read those chapters and see how Don playing there really made some big changes in the football program and its popularity, and even having to add to the stadium because the crowds grew so much. That was really fun to see his impact on that. And I just wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that and his years at UNM.
Yes, he was one of the first black players. He wasn't the first, but he was one of the first black players to play at UNM. And he was with several others in the late 1950s. He got along tremendously with everyone. Everyone respected Don so much. If you were just with him for 5 minutes, you understood how people would like him and respect him. Not as an athlete necessarily, not as a football player. It was just his good nature. He always put you at ease. He did within 5-10 minutes when I first met him. Thank goodness I had a chance to interview him several times before he died last year. But he was famous in the dorms because he was such a great leader and people looked up to him. He had the first white roommate, a fellow from Albuquerque, from South Broadway, who knew a lot about Hispanics and blacks and other minorities, George Freiberg. And they get along famously. And in fact, I just saw George the other day, and he was so glad to have the book because it brought back such great memories for him. The most famous game at UNM was against Air Force in 1959. And in those days, Air Force was terrific. It was beating top teams like Army, which was one of the top teams in the country. And in 1959, the Lobos played Air Force up in Denver. They didn't have a field at Colorado Springs yet. And Don scored the winning touchdown. And they won 28-27. And when he came, you might remember in that chapter, when they came home on the plane, there were so many thousands of people there at the airport to greet them all. The track was all backed up from Gibson to Central. So many people wanted to come out. They had to land the plane further away from the terminal there because there were so many people. They didn't understand what was going on. And then they opened the door and pretty much carried off the field there. It was just a great, great experience.
That was a really fun section to read. So I was just up in Albuquerque a couple weekends ago dropping my son off and drove that route. And I was like, man, that is a long way all the way from Gibson to Central.
It's amazing. And he was an All-American, UNM's first All-American. And you're right, they had to expand the football stadium when it was right there in the middle of campus. And then the following year is when they built the new stadium on South Campus. And it was a year after he had graduated, but he had helped build the program up so much that they needed a whole new stadium. And thank goodness, I don't know if your listeners know that on the football stadium at UNM, they have four huge murals of most famous football players. And Brian Urlacher, for example, is the fourth one, but the very first one is Don Perkin.
Well, it's so neat to have that history with him and to still have that remembered there at the stadium, and just remind players and people there, you know, what you can make of yourself. Because you talk about in his early years, he was rather small for his role, and that made it hard for coaches to sometimes take him seriously despite his great showing, especially moving up to college and then NFL. And like, well, but he's just kind of a little guy.
Yeah, really. At every stage, they questioned that, and he proved them wrong.
He did, and that's he was so humble while doing it, but he really gave it his all. Even when you mentioned several times in his mind, he's like, "I'm gonna go. I'm gonna try. I'm gonna get cut, but you know, I'm gonna move on."
Yes.
Just what a wonderful attitude to have.
Yeah, and he, as part of Don's way, he didn't take himself so seriously. You know that. This could be the end all. In fact, I should mention that all during his career and then all after his career for decades, he made speeches about many, many different kinds of groups, but especially high school groups. And he went all over the state and into Texas, different parts of the country, Gallup and Deming and Taos and Farmington. In 1991, he was up in Farmington talking to the young people there. And his message is always the same, that they should strive to do what they are most comfortable in doing and can do the best, and learn from football, which is to, when you're knocked down, you know, not give up. Get up and get ready for the next play. And he said that was the most important thing to learn from football that you could apply in life.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful lesson. And I think, you know, looking at his history, another thing that struck me was that his father was not supportive of him playing sports. That in his dad's mind, you don't bank on some, you know, pie in the sky dream. You get through, you get a job, you find something stable, unsafe, and you try to do a little better than he did and make money and support, which, you know, is not a terrible mindset. But that was another thing that Don had to overcome. You mentioned in the book that his dad didn't attend a single one of his high school football games. And I was just thinking, like, oh, how difficult that was for a young person to not have that added measure of support and to just keep pushing on and saying, you know, this is something I do well. I have other people who are encouraging me. I'm going to keep going, even if, you know, even some of the closest people in your life are saying, that's foolish. Why are you spending your time doing this? You should do something else. And, you know, he kept going. He persevered and didn't let other people's opinions stop him from doing what he felt he could achieve.
Right. His father always had that attitude, and that wasn't helpful necessarily. And his mother died when he was 16. So that just taught him how to be more independent. That's unusual because for a lot of kids, that would be disaster, life of disaster. But it didn't in his case. He was so independent, he would just go out and try things. And so often, things would come to him. It was amazing. Football came to him. You know, like I said, the coaches couldn't wait to put a uniform on him when he was in seventh grade. He didn't go looking for it. He didn't try out. Came to him. And that happened many times in his life. He would be looking for something new to do, and somebody would walk through the door with a new opportunity.
Well, it's wonderful that he took them and didn't squander those chances when they came around. Certainly not something everyone can say. When you have those opportunities, you know, make use of them. See what you can do and put your best effort into it.
You know, one of the amazing things he ever told me, it was the first thing he ever said to me. And it really set me back when he said it. He said, you know, I don't know who I am. And I said, oh, no.
Does he mean he doesn't? Hard.
He's got dementia, and he doesn't remember because he did have dementia, or he doesn't know what career he should have been in, or whatever. Because a lot of the careers just fell in place for him; he didn't choose them necessarily. The one career he chose was being a truck driver. He took off. He learned how to drive a semi, and for 1986, he just went around the country driving a semi, and he just loved it.
That's so interesting that. There's got to be some simplicity to that, some calming time to yourself. I can see that being very appealing. And what an interesting adventure to have for a year.
Yeah, really. But then at the end of the year, I think he said it exactly a year, but it just so happened. He just missed his kids so much that he had to come back to Albuquerque and settle down again.
And he was definitely very focused on family throughout his life. That was something that was very apparent in the book. I was really just drawn by his relationship with his wife, and especially early in their relationship, the way he takes some surprising action to protect her and make sure that she can't be harmed. And if you want to get into that a little bit, just that focus for him on his family and being someone that he felt lived up to the standards that he set for himself as a husband and a father. That was just really a wonderful part of the book throughout it.
Yes. You mentioned his relationship with his first wife, Virginia, and we shouldn't give it away. We need people to be curious enough to read the book.
Yes.
But he was a great person for all the things he did for Virginia. And Virginia was so helpful that the book, I don't know if you noticed, is dedicated to her. And they did have, they had three of their own children, and then they adopted a little girl, Judy. He raised those kids love him so much. I asked him, what's the scariest day he ever had in football? In fact, in his life. And I thought he was going to say, you know, we were playing the Chicago Bears, and the fullback was coming down, and he was tackling me, and but it wasn't. It was when his son, Randy, broke his neck playing football in high school. He went to Albuquerque Academy, and he broke his neck in a game against Estancia in 1982. And that was scary. But the scariest thing, I said, that must have been horrible. And he says, yeah, but the scariest part of that day was having to go home and tell Virginia.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Oh, it's just that heart-stopping moment watching the game. That's hard to imagine. I've thankfully never had to experience that with one of my kids. But, oh my goodness, yeah, then having to go home and tell his mom what just happened. And, I can just imagine. Yeah. That was not a good day all around for them.
But, you know, he didn't discourage his kids from playing sports, especially football. He didn't encourage them. They just did it because they were good athletes. Then it was very important to him, and everyone I ever talked to about visiting his house or apartment, they always said you never knew he was a football player. There were no trophies, there were no photographs, no awards, because he wanted to be accepted as an individual, not just a football player. And he never wanted his children to think that that's what he would judge them by, his children and his grandchildren. And so to the very end, when he was in a nursing home, his room there had no indication at all that he was Don Perkins. In fact, his stepdaughter, this is amazing, he went on a trip, a class trip with his stepdaughter, and they were on the bus, and they got off the bus, and all these kids came around him to greet him. And the stepdaughter said, why do they make such a big deal about him? Because she didn't even know that he was a great football player.
How funny. You're just like, oh, wait, yeah, what? Really? You're famous?
Yeah, really.
Well, I think there's just so many really great qualities that he exhibits that really I think people can take a lot from. You know, this isn't just a book about an NFL player, and if you love football, you'll want to read it. It's a really wonderful story about his whole life and who he was, and really even some of the work he did after football. You mentioned a little bit. As I was going through that, I was really impressed with how much he got involved with. A lot of athletes now, you see more of that. They stay active and have different charities and things. But it seems like that was a little bit more unusual in his time period. But he had some of those opportunities, like you said, that kind of came to him, or in his work of dealing with people being treated more fairly and people being more aware of the harm it causes people to be, you know, denied access to things based on the color of their skin. And tell us a little bit more about some of his work after. He was very involved with charities that helped people and tried to make people's lives better, which is wonderful.
Yeah, right. He worked for two governors, David Cargo and Bruce King, and he was active in their administrations. And he knew, especially Cargo, exploited him for his race. Cargo wanted to be able to say he had so many minority people in his administration. And Perkins knew that, and he accepted it and did the best he could with it to do some good things. But then he was a sportscaster, including for Channel 7 in Albuquerque. But then he sportscaster for CBS. He was one of the first black sportscasters. Then he, like I said, drove a truck. And he worked for the Albuquerque Police, community relations. That was real important to him. And then you might remember that he was an amateur actor. He never made it to the big screen like Don Meredith or some of the others, but he just enjoyed working on the stage and as a character. He did a Chautauqua performance. He impersonated Frederick Douglass in many parts of New Mexico and other parts of the country, too.
He's really a surprising person.
Yes.
There was a lot. I
heard so many good things about Don Perkins, and after a while, I got to asking people when I would interview them, didn't he do anything bad? And one time I asked an athlete that's a good friend of Don's, and he had to think, and later in the interview, he said, getting back to that thing he might have done bad. I said, yeah, what did he do bad? He says, I remember one time we were in the pool with the kids, and he got mad at the kids for splashing. I said, that's the best you can do? Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. What a wonderful thing to be remembered for.
I know, really.
That was the worst thing someone could think of you, that you told some kids to quit splashing you in the pool.
I know, really. And at his second wedding, his brother was the best man, and he pushed Don into the pool, and then they all jumped in the pool. I don't know how much splashing went on there, but anyway.
Well, we are getting close to being out of time already. We could probably talk about this for quite a while longer, but I did want to just remind our listeners that the book is called Don Perkins, A Champion's Life, and that's by Richard Melzer. And where can people find you and the book?
Well, I'm here in Belen, New Mexico, and always available to have conversations like the very nice conversation we've just had, presentations about Don Perkins. And you can get them at bookstores. I know Barnes & Noble usually carries it. But the easiest way for people, of course, is Amazon.
Mm-hmm. And it looked like I'd found your page on UNM Press. That's who published the book. Do you have any website, social media, that sort of stuff, or kind of stay out of that at this point?
Oh, I do. I love writing so much. I'm just horrible about marketing. I'm really bad. I just want to get on to the next project.
Yeah, marketing's not necessarily my favorite part of being a writer either, so I totally understand that. But are you working on any current projects that you want to give a little shout out to and have people keep an eye out for?
Well, I'm working on a really different kind of project. The UNM Press asked me to write a book called A History of New Mexico and 100 Objects. Oh. A History of New Mexico and 100 Objects. And so we identify 100 objects, mostly in museums, that are important in New Mexico history. Okay. And then I take pictures of them, and I write a chapter on each one of them.
What a fun idea. I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. It's interesting. You would think there are a lot of things about certain periods, but there's very little, if any. For example, this is really relevant to your part of the state. I'm trying to find something for the Navajo Code Talkers.
Oh.
And people have suggested, I've got a picture of one of their hats, and that might do it. But, I'd love to get, and they can't be photographs. They have to be things, preferably in museums. Yeah.
Huh. There is. I'm trying to think.
So if anybody in your audience knows anything about that, please let me know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't know if you've ever been by it, but there's kind of a really oddly placed little museum inside of a fast food restaurant. I think it's actually across the border into Arizona. I will have to look that up and send it to you because they have a really lovely display there that has different items from the Code Talkers. Yeah,
wow.
Let me look that up and I will try to send you some information on that because that might be something that could help.
And that's how you find things. You talk to people. You know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited to hear more about this. Keep in contact. I'd love to have you back to talk about that when you're ready. I just want to thank you so much, Richard, for taking the time to chat with me today and tell us more about Don Perkins. It's a wonderful book, and I hope people take the time to check it out.
Well, that's wonderful for you to say that. I appreciate it. Now, I'll close by saying that Albuquerque is now named a road after him, and I love the name. It says Don Perkins Way. Mm. And if we all follow Don Perkins Way, we'd be a lot better off.
Absolutely. Yeah, like I said, I mean, this is not just football stats and a listing of what he did in his career. It's really a look at a very unique life, and I think people can learn a lot from him.
Yes.
Thank you again so much. And yeah, I look forward to having you back for a future talk.
All right. I will look forward to that, too. Thank you so much.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.